Welcome to Pop a la Carte. This is episode 50,
which,
super, super exciting. We do not have super exciting topics, but we have lots of them, because 50 is a lot of episodes.
Maybe we should, like, at 52, because that would have been 52 weeks of podcasting.
Oh, nah.
But it wasn't actually a year.
We're just going to have a ton of exciting celebrations all year round. We're exciting people.
Every time we hit a 5, we get excited. Yes. Or a number we like, right? Yep. That's how it works.
So, you're here with Tatiana.
Valerie.
And Angela.
And today, we are going to talk about some important news, like Timeless fans getting their movie.
Yay!
Star Wars Episode 9 casting and Carrie Fisher news. Also yay.
Yeah.
And the end of the originals for all
Which
of you.
Which is also yay.
Sorry. Also yay. I think even fans think it's yay when it's
probably
when a Julie Plex show is over. Our expectations for Crazy Rich Asians. And finally, we will discuss the more general topic of adaptations from books to movies or TV shows, when they are great, when they are shit, and when they are literally as good as the original.
Most of the time, the book was better than the movie.
Yes. Unless AKA you didn't
TV
know
show.
The book.
Or also. Yes. Yeah, and that doesn't count. Yeah.
All right. Timeless. Didn't get renewed. Did get its movie. Thoughts, feelings, questions, concerns.
I mean, I'm glad for the fans. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think any of us watched it.
I watched the first season.
I watched the first episode.
No, I mean, I think that, like, obviously it engendered a really passionate fan base.
Yeah.
So.
They really care.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, they really care.
Yes, they do. So.
I'm happy for them. For
yeah.
Them. Yeah. Even though I've never seen it, I was rooting for them.
Yeah. It's kind of, okay, I don't know if you guys know this person named, TV Grim Reaper or something like that, like ratings Grim Reaper. I don't know. He's on Twitter and he does ratings, but he also just like does like just snarky commentary about ratings.
Yeah.
So he really seems to hate the, you know, fans rallying to get shows uncanceled or renewed or whatever. Yeah. Cause he's like, it's just about, you know, the money or whatever. So he's like, oh, since the cast and everyone was saying, oh, it's because of the fans, you know, like NBC was like, oh, it is NBC, right? We didn't want to be the bad guys.
Yes.
So. And then it was like, or Sony just lowered their price, is what he was saying. He's like, obviously what happened is Sony lowered their price. And I don't even know what that means, because I don't know how Sony is involved with Timeless.
Sony probably, they produce it.
Oh, NBC okay.
Just, it's the same way that NBC was making Brooklyn Nine-Nine for Fox.
Well, thank you. There we go. So, either way, thank you, Sony, if that's what happened. But,
yeah.
Now I can feel comfortable watching season two, because the one thing that I didn't love about Timeless was how Rufus was clearly less important than the main ship.
Yeah.
Well, I call them Wyatt, because I don't remember their actual names. Wyatt and Lucy. Okay, so, and then in season two, I know that season two ended in a particular way that really did not make me ever want to watch season two, especially when it did not get renewed. So, I hope the movie fixes it, so then I can complete the series.
So you'll wait until
yes.
you
see until the movie actually happens, and I know what happens, and then I will watch.
Yeah, I have it's funny because since we're going to talk about adaptations, it actually fits into that too.
Mm-hmm.
I can, with books, I have an easier time kind of, usually, depends on the book, distancing myself and just going in and being like, this resembles a book I just once read.
Mm-hmm.
History, I have a harder time. If I really know the history, I have a harder time watching an adaptation. So I didn't even know the history of the Hindenburg that well, but
right.
I could already tell. I was like, this show is going to absolutely drive me insane. So, that's why I never got past the
How do you, I guess Doctor Who goes to more fantastical places. Is
yes.
that why? Because I was like, how do you do it?
Yeah,
Doctor
I know,
Who?
That's a good point. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, they barely ever deal with history.
Yeah.
Although that was always the reason I said I wasn't sure if I wanted a female doctor, because I didn't want them to negate what a woman would have gone through if they went into the past, but I didn't want it to always focus on that either, because then that's gonna get old.
Yeah.
And, but then, obviously, I cried when I found out there was gonna be a woman doctor, so obviously I didn't completely feel that way. But no, I mean, most of the time, you know, most of the time, they're just kind of tangentially dealing with history. It's like, either not a like, big fixed point, or it's, like, one moment, and they're trying to be like, this is how that thing happened. Mm-hmm. And we don't know how that thing happened. So, for instance, when they go into the Agatha Christie storyline, right. It was what the hell happened to her for those 10 days or whatever it was that she was missing.
So we can't, yeah.
So I maybe that's why? I don't know.
Yeah, I can see that. So what's your excuse, Angela? Why don't you watch Timeless?
If it's not a K-drama, it's a really high bar to jump for. Otherwise, you can't watch many American shows.
But yeah, Jessica's been, you know,
she's obsessed. So I'm very, very happy for her and the rest of the fans. That's always good, you know, because it does suck when you love something and they never get to finish it.
Yeah, and this really kind of feels like a year for revivals. Like, I don't know, like, things are not really dying. The only one that's staying dead so far is Shadowhunters.
And The Exorcist.
And The Exorcist, that's right. I feel like it was canceled, like, earlier on, so I forgot about it. Or at least it stopped airing earlier on.
It just didn't get the same push. Yeah. And to be honest, as much as they had an ongoing story that it's unfortunate we'll never see, each season was a the main storyline, and we got a finale for that.
Right.
So, as much as I love The Exorcist and I'm sad it's not coming back, I don't necessarily feel like I absolutely need it. It's not as heartbreaking.
Yeah, for me, I guess, for me, it's like, when something is canceled, as long as it had an ending, that it was a good ending, you know, that I'm satisfied with, then I don't need more of it. Because more always means there could be worse.
Yes.
Which is why I think that Shadowhunters is in a good position, just because they've been given enough notice to be able to wrap it up, and they're going to have that 2-hour finale.
They actually got really lucky that way, because how many shows get that? The only one I can think of right now is Dollhouse.
Right, Dollhouse. And that was that was impressive, because with only 2 seasons, right, they are basically told, hey, you know, this is not going to
It was like, you've got 6 more episodes, wrap it up, and that's why the second season completely reverses so much. But at least it does have, you know,
right.
It gets in fucking insane, but it's kind of
that has a sense of completion.
But it has a sense of completion right again.
I can't remember seeing, I don't know if it was Mike Schur or somebody else that's, like, high up on Brooklyn Nine-Nine was saying that after their flirt with cancellation, he's not gonna cliffhanger ending the next season.
That's so sweet.
It's probably smart. Well, and that's obviously what S.H.I.E.L.D. did, because they were like, well, we barely made it last year.
Yeah.
Let's just give us a finale. And then they were like, hey, here's some more episodes. And it was like, wait, what?
What is the news? Was there news about S.H.I.E.L.D. for season 6 that people were mad about?
That people were mad at?
Because I just saw that, I saw a couple days ago, not even a week ago at this point, that Natalia Cordova Buckley tweeted something about, like, how she hadn't meant to upset fans, or she wished the fans would respond less aggressively about something, and then
I don't know, like, they all
love Coulson or whatever, and I was like, are they saying that he's not coming back? Like, what was it? But
I think they're distracted. It feels like they're kind of not trying to say that he's coming back, but that's, like, why, I think that's part of the reason that Clark Gregg is directing the first episode.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're obviously going to film the entire season. So we're going to know that Coulson is back well before you actually air it. So you might as well just fucking tell us. Because if he's there beyond the, 8 days it takes to film an episode,
maybe they'll just be really top secret about it. I don't know.
They're going to try and pull a Marvel Studios?
Yeah, try to pull Marvel Studios.
It's going to be a lot harder to pull off for that long, though. Yeah. I don't know. No, I have no idea. I didn't hear anything, so.
So no.
I don't know.
I don't know either. But anyway.
That's the only thing I know.
Maybe it was about Fitzsimmons. No, it couldn't have been.
That would upset people.
Yeah, that would definitely upset people. She believes that he'll come back. It's fine. Whatever.
Yeah.
It'll all be fine, guys. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has always been awesome. It will continue to be awesome. Minus, like, 6 episodes in season 1. Okay. Moving on to Star Wars Episode 9 news. We got some new casting, and we learned that
Carrie Fisher will be back.
Yeah. With using its unused footage from before, right?
Yeah.
So that's
unused footage from The Force Awakens specifically.
Oh, not from The Force Awakens and not from
yeah, that's what they said. Yeah,
that's
from Force Awakens.
Scenes with Rey, I want
to
say.
Oh. Okay, that's exciting.
Interesting.
Yeah. I wonder if they're going to have to do some kind of like ADR situation to have give an explanation for why, you know, where she goes off to.
Yeah, if they're really going to do this, I'm hoping they just kind of let her live out her life.
She better fucking live.
And
like, listen.
Yeah, that we don't find out. Yeah, she just, you know.
Yeah. Like,
I feel like it's like, because wasn't the movie ended with, like, them hoping that her name would rally people on the album or whatever.
And then it didn't, and I was furious.
She can be like, I have to go do that.
Yeah, she actually has to go in person.
Yeah.
They can be like, oh, we have this message from the general.
Right. I love that. I hope that they write that in, that people actually do come because of her, you know?
Yeah.
And then even though she's not on screen, it'll still give us, you know, her presence.
Yeah.
And I just feel like that's so important, because, like, I know, like, a lot of times when the actor dies, the character dies or whatever, but Princess Leia specifically is, like, such an iconic role, and it was so important to Carrie, you know? And Carrie's so important to us because of Princess Leia as well.
Yeah.
That I think that even, you know, in real life you die, but you live on. You live on screen. So yeah. I feel like she should live on for that reason alone.
Yeah, because what did they do in Mockingjay Part 2 when Philip Seymour Hoffman died? His character wasn't killed. They just used what they could of him, and then he just didn't play as important a role as he was intended.
I think so. I mean, I think that character does die in that movie.
Oh, but, I can't remember.
Like, I mean, I meant to say, I think his character dies in the...
In the story.
In the story. I don't remember what happened in the movie.
Yeah, but, I don't remember. I only saw it once.
Yeah. I only half saw it once. Clearly, I don't remember at all. But yeah, I don't think that they definitely did not specifically kill him in the movie because
of that. Yeah.
I
think the important thing is that obviously, if her daughter approves and her brother approves,
yeah, fans it sounds can't like the family's really, happy.
Yeah,
with
it's like
so.
the family wants that,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, fans can't be. I think for the most part, people they just didn't want them to do a CGI version.
Right, which they had already done in
Rogue One,
thank you. But that was different because she was alive.
Yes.
And they just needed to make her young.
And so. She looked very plastic.
Yeah, it was very
compared to
it was
the original trilogy.
Why didn't they have just they used her and de-aged her? Because Marvel does it all the time now.
I know!
Yeah.
Marvel
yeah.
is doing it for the entirety
and even
of Captain Marvel. With
and Tron did it with
Greg and Sam Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
Tron did it with Jeff Bridges. Mm-hmm.
Jeff Bridges is getting de-aged all over the place.
That wasn't actually that good, right?
Hey, that was many moons ago.
That's not,
okay.
That's not Jeff Bridges.
Oh, no, that's
yeah.
So, yeah, if they can fucking... It's the same company. If Marvel can do it, right. Share that technology with your brother.
With your brother.
Go tell Lucasfilm.
Like,
yeah. They do! Because that's, like... That was the thing of, what's her face? I'm blanking on every... Ryan Coogler and...
Ava DuVernay.
Yeah.
They talked about how they were right across the hall from each other when they were working on Black Panther and A Wrinkle in Time.
Oh, that's so cool.
So, obviously they do work
yeah.
right there. So, mm-hmm. somebody just walk across the hall.
And be like, hey, you need this?
How do you do that? Yeah.
I can see Carrie Fisher being like, because she was always really, outspoken about not being apologetic about aging. And
right.
Like
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
Right. That's true. That's true.
But it is different when they're not trying to make you look better now.
Right. They're just
literally,
they literally
need
like you did when
younger,
you were 19.
Yeah. I still think they should have just done it where, like, you saw her
right, just, like, her back or whatever, yeah.
Either the
yeah.
back of her,
and
or...
you just heard her voice.
Or even, like, her reflection mm-hmm. in the glass or something, and then it yeah. didn't have to be, like, full, you know, it's just a little bit.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, that's another topic.
I agree. But, yeah, so we also got casting news, and I literally cannot remember the new cast, but I was very excited.
Carrie Russell's in it.
Oh, so they did confirm that Carrie Russell's going to be in it.
Yeah.
Because I had remembered...
I'm like, no,
I remember
when
it was rumored
release.
That she was going to be in it. But then I don't remember if she was actually on the press release. So, episode 9 cast, obviously the returning actors. And new casters will be Naomi Ackie, who is from 2016's Lady Macbeth, Keri Russell, yes, and Richard E. Grant. So, and that we don't know the roles yet. So, yeah, Richard Grant's great. And I'm excited that Naomi Ackie, actually have a black woman that hopefully will not be CGI, because obviously they have Lupita Nyong'o.
What has she been in before?
She was in Lady Macbeth, and I do not know. I actually know something else from her, but they did not list it, so I don't know what it is. Because. I need to have. Oh yeah, she's in Yardie. She's in Yardie with Idris Elba and Amal Amin.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, hopefully she won't be under makeup because
yeah.
Well, I mean she'll be under makeup,
right? But hopefully she won't be under like CGI.
Like,
won't be like a CGI creature
and
will
like
live more than 15 minutes. She was in an episode of Doctor Who. I have a feeling I know who she was. Jen. She was Jen in an episode of Doctor Who in Face the Raven. So it was a Clara 12th Doctor episode.
Oh, I probably didn't.
They're like, no.
I wasn't watching at that point.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, okay, sad. Anyway. I just saw Danny Pink's name and I got emotional.
Aww.
So, anyway.
Anyway.
Yeah. So it looks like some good additions. I'm excited to see who Kerry Russell will play.
I'm still really, really hesitant on the entire movie, because I still don't know how I feel about the first two until I see this movie, and I don't trust
So
DJ
basically the fate of the entire trilogy rests in
It
J.
really
J.
does.
Fans.
And yeah. I don't trust J.J. Abrams, so... Yeah. Should be interesting.
I'm having more fun with the idea of ping pong between J.J. and Rian Johnson, so that's what I'm looking forward to.
It's just gonna be really weird if he basically undoes things that were implied, and you're like, no, I want Rey to be a nobody. Don't mm-hmm. fucking change it now. It's too late.
Well,
you should have stayed on.
Kerry Russell will be her nobody mother.
if that's what you wanted to do, then you A, should have actually either you should have written it and directed it yourself. Mm-hmm. Or if you weren't gonna do that, you should have B, executive produced and like actually been involved in mapping a story as opposed to just being like, here, Rian Johnson, do whatever you want.
Right.
Don't change it now. I like that implication. Mm. It's not even that, like, I don't really fucking care if Kylo Ren was wrong or not, if he was lying to her. I don't really care. I just think that's a much more interesting story. Not everybody is a fucking Skywalker or Kenobi.
I think that's a nice thematic concept. Yes. I don't really care if she's a Kenobi or a Squashy. I would think that, I hope she's not a Kenobi. I think that's stupid.
Yeah,
she's either Skywalker or she's nobody. That's fine. I don't care either way. But I just didn't like that Kylo was the one to reveal that to her, and that it was not a journey for her. You know?
Yeah.
I hated that. But that's what my whole problem with Force Awakens was, is that I hated that it was like, and now it's the Kylo hour. Kylo time. So anyway,
what are your thoughts? Because
we have to have man tears.
For the most part, I ignore, as best I can, the part where it's like Star Wars of like my old characters that I love, and I just want happy endings for like Finn and Rey and Rose. And
right.
Just,
well, because they already ruined the characters that we love, lives, so.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knew that Mark Hamill would be back. He played coy about it, but we don't know.
Yeah. I can't even be surprised about that, because I was like, okay. And the Billy Dee Williams news. I mean,
that's exciting.
That's exciting, yeah. But it's not new.
And right.
We assumed at some point.
Yes. I mean, I guess it was a little touch and go, because we'd been two episodes, and Han Solo died without a hint of, you know. of Lando
Han Solo
knowing
didn't get to say hi to either his best friend, well, his other best friend besides Chewie,
yeah,
or his ex brother in law,
right? Yeah, whatever.
Who
anyway,
was another best friend.
All these wasted opportunities. But aside from that,
just because fucking Harrison Ford wanted to die,
yes,
and we had to give Kylo Ren man feels.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I am excited for Billy Dee Williams to come back. But yeah. I agree that it was, you know, an obvious choice. It was a necessary and obvious choice.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Anyway. you didn't watch the finale of the originals? Those were going to talk
I
about
did it. Not watch it, but my timeline watched it. And so, I know...
They had feels.
Yes. I know that y'all had a lot of emotions about the originals finale. I'm not surprised Klaus died. Which, spoiler alert, I guess. Spoiler! Klaus dies! And so there's no, you know, like, even though the originals was composed of people fighting each other, the showrunners and the cast, over who Klaus should bone, in the end...
He didn't bone anybody.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, he's boned all of them, He didn't get to, bone anyone for a long period of time. So, because he's dead. Because his ass is dead. And Cammy, I will say this, like, because of the Ship Wars, I was like, let me just jump in here and watch some episodes of the original so I can, you know, understand what everyone is fighting about. And I had already known what everyone was fighting about many years prior to that, because I watched the first three seasons of the Vampire Diaries.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Camille O'Connor, uh-huh, started off as, like, I don't know if she was the female lead of originals, but she was the love interest for Klaus, okay? She was, like, the, she's, like, a psychiatrist, and just, like, a general, like, average human that was, like, trying to understand him and whatever, so he falls in love with her. Cool. And everyone hated her for reasons. I don't know why. I still don't understand why. Everyone hated her. They wanted her to die. Whatever. And then she did eventually die, because originals killed off, like, all its women at some point or another, and I don't understand why.
Oh, but, it's like Supernatural, though.
Yeah, right? It's like Supernatural. So, she died, and I was like, well, I don't like that, so I'm not gonna try to continue the originals, because and that always feels to me like when a female character is hated, and then she just dies, I'm like, I feel like that's you responding to people hating her, and therefore I don't like that. Yeah. So, I also quit Teen Wolf when they killed Allison, because I was like, nope, I can't live like this. But anyway, So she died, and then it was just, like, Haley, who was his baby mama. Like, the whole story of Virgil starts off with, like, he had a one-night stand with his werewolf girl named Haley. And then now there's a hybrid child they have, right? Because she's a werewolf, and he's the vampire, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So Hope is their hybrid child. But they're not in love with each other. She's, in fact, in love with his brother. And everyone also hated that ship. her and his brother, because people wanted her to be with Klaus. Unless they wanted Claroline to happen. And I don't know if y'all remember Claroline, but that was, like, one of the biggest ships from the Vampire Diaries, even though it was, like, a one-night stand in the 100th episode.
Wow.
Which, like, only happened to begin with, because people were, like, shipping it from, like, the moment that, I don't know, sometime in season 2, when he just started being like, oh, you're hot. And also, you know, I decided to stop trying to kill you, because you're so attractive, so. But anyway, so people were still waiting for that ship to happen, even though Caroline was married to Stefan, right? And then Vampire Diaries ended, and Stefan died, so that Klaus could write her a letter and be like, what's up? Here's some money. And then she's like, oh, let me go visit Klaus. So, anyway. So then that's the new ship war of Haley and Caroline. But then Haley died because his brother, Elijah, killed her while he wasn't himself or something. I don't know, some garbage. So then she's dead, and I was like, what is this? They're killing all the women so he can be with Caroline? But no. Because then he died. And so I feel
sweet, at least they didn't kill her.
Exactly. Yeah. At least they didn't kill Caroline.
I suppose that's the
I feel good that he died. Caroline's still alive. She didn't have to be with Klaus. I feel great joy about this. I'm sorry if you shipped Claroline, but I definitely did not. And yeah, I don't know. I feel like sometimes these stories seem to end a lot about, like, redemption and death, because, like, Vampire Diaries also ended with Stefan dying.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, maybe don't get so invested in the ships of a Julie Plec show that for some reason it always, like, inspires people to, like, attack each other and to, like, attack the creators and to, like, you know, like, leak people's addresses and stuff. So, like, maybe don't do that and just watch the show expecting your leading man to die. So whoever the leading man is in Legacies, good luck to you, because you're going to be dead, and hopefully Hope will live on.
Yay! That is the moral.
Yes, that is my original ending story. Do you guys have any feelings about this?
I just really don't think I'll ever watch any of those shows. Because, like, everything I've heard, I don't know. It feels like they go on way too long.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it says the girl who's still watching Supernatural.
But Supernatural doesn't, you know, after the first 5 seasons, I'm like, does it really have a story? Doesn't just, like, enjoy itself?
Yes and no. It's better when it has a story, but mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't know.
I'm not gonna watch it.
It is not up to Angela's, not a K-drama standard.
Like, I'm so confused, but whatever.
Oh, yeah, I also didn't mention this girl named Davina, who also dies, because she's killed by her boyfriend while he is not himself. So this is, like, a thing, a recurring theme that happens for some reason.
Okay.
But I don't know how she's brought back. I guess because she's a witch. I just know that she's alive by the end of it, and she's married to that dude that killed her. So I'm like, that's great. Also, he killed himself after he killed her, because he was like, oh, shit. And then he killed himself, but then they're both back. I don't know how that happened, but I'm super happy for them, I guess.
At least if you ship them.
Yeah, right? Safe, I guess you were sort of safe after that time where he killed her. But anyway.
So I hope you like Legacies. We won't be watching it.
The moral of that story.
Yes. Yes. So next up, we have Crazy Rich Asians, which is coming soon to a theater near you and not a streaming site.
Because
they turned down enough money to buy their own island, one of them said.
Buy their own island? Crap, that's a shitload of money.
Hyperbole. I think the author might have said that. They tend to hyperbole.
Well, that's true.
He was just, I think it was his way of being like, a lot more money than we got for the studio.
Yeah.
For the movie.
Because the important thing for them was to have a wide-scale release
mm-hmm.
in theaters and hopefully make a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean, I feel it's like not just like make a lot of money, right? Although that would
just
be
get
the
exposure.
Idea. But to get the exposure, yeah. Exactly. And to make it like, just because no matter how much money, I don't even know, like, the money you make from, like, Netflix would just be, like, they paid you for it, right? And that's the money you make. You don't make, like, oh, this many people watched it, so, you know, residuals.
They still get residuals based on what their unions are and what...
Okay.
Because they will get residuals mm-hmm. for the rest of their life or however it...
Right. Yeah.
So they'll get some, but they may get like, they don't get back end. Like, Robert Downey Jr. gets a hell of a lot more money for the Marvel films than anybody else does because he has some deal where he also gets a percentage of the revenue created by the films.
Right. So, I feel like, yeah, exposure and then just, like, being, like, it's, like, a bigger deal to be an important theatrical release, I think. Yeah. For, you know, for the community, for...
Because we, that Mowgli, or Mowgli, how do we pronounce it? Movie. Oh, yeah. The new Andy Serkis version of...
Jungle Book?
Jungle Book. I was going to say Jungle Cruise, and I was like, that's not right!
That's not the right one.
Jungle Book also, I actually did go to Netflix.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, it was just, like, that was actually news this last week that I forgot. Oh,
there we go!
It did go to Netflix, but because Netflix paid a shit ton of money for it.
Interesting.
So it's not going to get the wide release, but they seemed okay with that.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I mean, when it is different just like the second Jungle Book movie coming out in the last 5 years, I feel like it's okay.
Perhaps if the Disney movie hadn't done as well as it did,
right,
it would have been a bigger deal. But yes, because it's supposedly darker. It's not a kid's movie.
Right.
Is what they've said. But, yeah, it is different because it's not, unless you're like, the Cloverfield Paradox.
Like, yeah, right? Unless you, like, make, like, a big little, like, let's all watch this movie right now!
It's
you know?
Dropped for, like, a second on Netflix, and then people will watch it as they get time, but yeah. It's not gonna get the same exposure.
Exactly.
Especially for a community as marginalized as the Asian community. Yes. Like, it's more important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally agree with that. I think it's nice to see, like, a lot of people, like, rallying around it, and also getting to read, like, different interviews from, like, Constance Wu and John Chu, and just, like, about, like, the importance, you know, the importance of it. And I hope that we're gonna see, you know, like, I hope it makes enough to get the sequel and on, because, like, I think there's, like, 3 books? There might be 4. But I just know I'm in the middle of reading China Rich Girlfriend, because I read Crazy Rich Asians, and then I started reading China Rich Girlfriend, but I have not gotten to finish that one. But, I mean, I like the book. You would just, I literally did not realize it. You said that the character said the N-word in the book at one point, and I obviously skipped that page because I don't remember it at all.
I mean, so I think I saw that on Twitter, so I did not see it for myself, so there's the book. I can't. But the picture had like a screen cap on it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's, you know.
Right.
Unverified. Unverified.
So. I am wondering now because, like, I also, like, don't even, like, the one thing that, like, I know I saw people talking about, like, Awkwafina's character, that being, like, she's kind of, like, you know, like, the stereotype of an Asian person appropriating African-American culture. So I'm like, I feel like that is Awkwafina's thing to begin with, because she kind of did that in Ocean's 8 as well. I just know that I don't remember a character that was like that in the book. You know what I mean? Like, there wasn't a character that would be like, oh, I understand who Awkwafina is playing here, you know? I feel like Rachel's friends were just mature, just like, oh, you know?
That's from
I don't remember that at all, but there you go. Bernard.
He uses the slang version of it.
Yeah.
With the AS.
Yeah.
At the end.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, is that a character that's supposed to be sympathetic? That you're supposed to like, or is
it
maybe
part of... I do not feel like he is.
Because that's the hard thing is, was the author trying to make a joke, like a point, that this is a problem?
No, well, this person did say, this character is the worst, everyone hates him, it's an example of how the satire illuminates anti-black sentiment, while at the same time appropriating the culture. I hope you read on, also this isn't in the movie.
Because so, I think that's the thing people need to forget, or need to not forget,
yeah,
is that it could be being used to tell you something.
I mean, like when it's like Quentin Tarantino and he uses it every page, you're like, you just want to use it.
Yeah.
But if it's just the one instance and it's part of showcasing anti-blackness to begin with, like that's the point of it, then...
I guess the difference is because I was going to say, because I am going to see Black Klansman, and I have to assume that the movie is going to use the word quite a bit.
But the creators of that are Black.
But the creators of the story, of the movie are Black, so
that's also a difference, too. So yeah, I mean, I hope that person who said that it's on the movie saw the movie and knows it's on the movie, and that's something that the movie knew to take out, right? Because there are ways
you can do without, it. Yes, without actually having that in.
If you don't even remember that character, then they couldn't have been much of a character.
I remember the character, I just don't remember that moment. Like, the character is just an annoying asshole. But I don't remember, I didn't remember that moment. Probably because it was that character, so I was like, okay.
Next chapter! Like, whatever, move on.
Yeah, exactly. Let me go on to the next page. Which I unfortunately do sometimes. You know, when I, like, you know.
You see that it's all some yeah. person. Yeah, you're like,
no, I gotta go. I can't live, like, you know.
Like anything with Umbridge.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Umbridge, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, not the same thing.
Although, it's like Harry Potter has his own form of racism, right?
That's the whole, which is the whole point.
Yeah, yeah.
But luckily she created her own words, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Any other Crazy Rich Asians feelings? Constance Wu feelings?
I'm excited. I want to see it. Oh my god.
When is it out? It is 15th, right?
I think it's the 15th. Oh, mm-hmm. That's like a Wednesday, so that seems weird to me.
So the 16th, perhaps?
But that's a Thursday. Yeah.
Well, I mean, because so usually they come out on Thursdays, right?
Thursday. Yeah. But the release date is actually
Friday.
It is. They'll do Wednesdays before major holidays, but that's not a major holiday, so that seems wrong.
August 15th. That's what it says. Crazy Rich Asians only in theaters August 15th. Maybe they just really want to have a cool Wednesday opening. Just seems like a good idea. Constance had said that before Crazy Rich Asians, she hadn't even done a small part in a studio film. So, like, that's...
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I mean, obviously, like, I know her best from Fresh Off the Boat, but how, like, I'm just surprised that, like, because she's been around for a while.
Yeah. I it's one of those movies, to be honest, I would like to see it,
mm-hmm.
but I don't have time.
Right.
There's so many movies. This is the time of year I'm like, I am at that point where, okay, so all the kerfuffle over MoviePass, I was like, the reason I didn't get one is I would love it. It would have been a great thing for me when it was working right.
Yeah.
But I just don't have time, and I'm going to go see the same movie. Like, the only movies I will make the time for at this point are usually Marvel.
Right.
Yeah. I don't have time for anything else until people tell me it's absolutely amazing. I have to see it, and usually then it's not in theaters anymore, and mm-hmm. I'm waiting for HBO or Netflix.
Yeah.
So, it's on my list.
Yeah, see, that's right. I mean, streaming. I guess we could have talked about MoviePass. I totally forgot about that. But yeah, like, MoviePass just, like, totally exploded. They're just like, oh, we don't have money. I don't know what they thought their business plan, like, what they thought they
what
were going to
do. What was their business plan?
Yeah.
Really? What was it? Because Matt had something similar when he was living in the UK, and that was almost 14 years ago, right? Uh-huh. But it was, in fact, he had it when I met him, so that was, like, over 16 years ago. Mm. He had it, and it was basically the cost of about two and a half tickets a month,
uh-huh.
but it was tied to one movie theater, and it was obvious, you know, yes, they could hope that you weren't going to go see movies, but it was their movie theater, whatever.
Yeah.
And they're hoping you're spending money on concessions.
Right.
That's how theaters actually make money, so it makes right. sense. MoviePass have no way to do it. If mm-hmm. you go to one movie in a month, they're fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what they were thinking.
So strange.
It
so
doesn't, strange. Like, AMC is doing their
option. Yeah, I was going to say, AMC has their thing.
And it's the cost of what's basically two movies a month. Uh-huh. And you get specials on concessions and stuff, because, again, that's how they yeah. make their money.
So I need AMC's to do their gonna thing. Make money. I need to do their thing.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
If I do it. And you can only go to one movie a day, but I think you can go to the same movie every day for, like, a week if you want to.
Nice.
I think it's AMC.
Nice.
Plus, it includes premium format, so you can see IMAX or 3D, which MoviePass did not include.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's
so interesting. I understand, and there are people who are like, but I, you know, save, like, $435 over a year.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, I'm sure, but that doesn't mean MoviePass was in it.
Right, MoviePass didn't work for them.
And if I have friends who say they're tied into, like, a year contract now. So
right,
they must
yeah.
have started introducing a contract. Then it's really bad, because you're going to, like, be forced to do it, and they're changing all these terms.
Yeah.
You know, you can't go the first 2 weeks of release.
Yeah,
now,
my friend said there was, like, an $8 surcharge.
Yeah.
When she went to get a ticket. I was like, well, then what's the point?
Yeah. You couldn't book
how
online.
How can you help with contract if they're going to change the terms of the contract?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be like, excuse me.
Alter it further.
Yes. they can hold you to the contract, but you can't hold them to the contract, apparently.
That's so. Yeah.
Yeah, it's bullshit. I am so glad I didn't do it. It just wasn't worth it.
Right.
I thought about it for a hot second after Infinity War, because I was, like, long going, like, six times, and then it was like, you can't see the same movie more than once, and I'm like, but then why would I do it?
Right. So I will get the Crazy Rich, or I will get the AMC version so that I can pay for Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah. Because it still will count as a movie ticket for that movie.
Yeah.
So it'll still add to its box office.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure how they really calculate that, but it does.
Yeah.
Because
okay.
it still counts as whatever.
Okay.
Like, AMC's still going to have to pay the studio.
Oh, okay, perfect.
The percentage of whatever percentage is agreed.
Oh, okay, does that make sense? So really, it's just that AMC makes less off of it But the movie itself still makes the same percentage. Because I always forget that, like, the full price of that ticket doesn't go to the movie theater.
Yeah.
That explains it.
Most of the time, I think it's... I don't remember what it is. I think it's, like, 50-50 or something like that. Oh, yeah. 50-50. Or 40-60, but, like...
Isn't it the reason why global, Disney like, international really box office isn't as great? Because it's a different percentage that theaters get more internationally than the box office does? Or, then I'm sorry, than the movie does? Because I think there's a reason that it's like, even no matter how much it makes internationally, it's not as important.
Disney.
I think they do in some countries anyway.
Yeah.
Money.
Yeah. Like in the bigger, in the ones where the box office is really big, I assume.
They also charge a hell of a lot less.
Yeah. They also charge less. Like I saw Infinity War for $4. Because it was in Mexico.
It's about the same price in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Except in London. Anyway.
So we're going to have a larger scale discussion about adaptations in general, like Crazy Rich Asians is one, and many other book-to-movie or book-to-TV adaptations are coming out, and already have come out, that we just didn't even know were adaptations. So
there's so many that I'll find out later that it was a book, and I was like, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So... Does anyone want to begin with a particularly either egregious book to movie adaptation or a particularly good one?
Well, I mean, because it's news, I'll go with the Is Dark Materials because it is actually they did just start filming the first season is gonna be 8 episodes of the adaptation of Is Dark Materials, which is the children's book series by Philip Pullman. That is absolutely amazing. Such a good story. Anyway, the first story was adapted by, I can't remember what studio, several years ago, The Golden Compass, which is called Northern Lights in the UK.
I feel like it was DreamWorks for some reason.
Can't remember. It starred Nicole Kidman and Daniel Craig. And it was actually not a bad adaptation. Taking such a dense book and turning it into a movie, it actually really wasn't too bad. Their one big problem was that book ends on a major downer. And they decided to save it for the second movie. And I really think that was I could be wrong. But to me, that felt like the wrong choice because it upset book fans. Mm-hmm. Not that it has a huge following in the U.S. or anything anyway. But, and I think you would have at least gotten people talking about what they did. Because it's pretty huge what happens. And you might have gotten people interested in seeing it if they heard what happened.
Right.
Instead, you know, it just...
Fizzled out.
What happens, or how it ends, is how it, you know, it's something that's happened in the book, and so it's going somewhere, but, yeah, it just, I don't know.
Right.
I think it could have been more interesting if they had just stuck to their guns and really done the book ending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know why you wouldn't at that point, other than just because you're scared it'll turn people off or something.
I think they were just afraid of doing it, because it, like, but then you were going to start the movie. The next movie is going to start with the major downer. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not happy books, really. They're really tragic. They're beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And they make you think a lot. There's a lot of theological stuff in it. I don't know. It's hard to say it because I don't want to spoil it for you because I know you haven't read them.
I mean, I'll forget. And it's been out for however long, right? So
yeah, how long ago were the books?
I mean, the books.
Exactly.
No. At least 20 years?
No, they're not that old. It's maybe 15.
15 years?
Oh. Yeah, it's probably about 15. All
right, spoil me. Hit me.
Okay, so the first book ends with one of the characters, a child, being killed.
Aww.
And basically what they do is they're sucking out their souls.
Oh.
Because they're...
Like a Dementor.
They're studying dark matter, basically, and they're trying to figure out what it is. And it ends up there's, like, multiple universes, and, like, literally in the last book... Major spoilers here. The last book, they kill God.
Oh.
But he's like a throwaway character. It's just like you almost don't even realize that's who it is supposed to be because it's not, it's the idea that that's not really what's important.
Uh-huh.
it, like, that it existed, but he just kind of fades away.
Oh, okay.
He fades into nothingness. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody actually murders him, but, right. like, you know, he's in a box and he just kind of fades away. And that's not the important story, though. And, like, it's so deep. It's really... But, I mean, there's, like, fucking fighting polar bears and airships, and they have a knife that can cut the fabric of reality so they can go between worlds. And so the world...
A cow.
Yeah. And there's a love story, which is interesting because it's a love story between the main character is Lyra Balakwa.
Okay.
But in the second book, it starts from a different character's perspective, and he's in basically... He's in our world? Yeah, he's in our world.
Okay.
And he's not introduced till the second story. And they do have a love story, but they're, you know, she starts the story at 12, and I think they're 16 by the end of it. So
when I read those books when I was about their age or a little bit older, I was like, aren't they young?
Yeah, they're really young. And it's kind of like, because in her world, they all have demons, which is like it's your soul is physical and real, and it takes the form of an animal. When you're a child, they can change shape.
Mm-hmm.
When you become an adult, they stay fixed in the one shape, and it kind of reflects you who you are as a person. So, like, a lot of the servants have dogs.
Oh.
It's interesting. And there's a whole thing where, like, you can't, like, it's taboo to touch another person's daemon. Demon. It's spelled daemon, so I always say daemon, but it's actually supposed to be demon.
Right.
Anyway, and so it does go into our world with Will, but he ends up, because of her, discovering his, and then, like, they touch each other's demons.
Scandalous!
And that's, and they're like...
It was very scandalous to me when I was a young child, who had a good thing with parents, not
until
I read this book.
And they're,
killing God.
Yeah. Right. And even I'm like, oh, almost.
Philip Pullman was raised Catholic, but I think he still considers himself basically Catholic, but he doesn't really agree with most of the church's doctrine.
Right.
And he's obviously, I think he's more agnostic, kind of.
Okay.
Not really an atheist, I don't think, but I could be wrong. I can't remember now. Anyway, but, it goes into a lot of ideas because it is, like, what is the soul, and are you, like, they're ripping away the children's demons.
Right.
And that's what kills them.
Oh,
and they basically become, like, ghostly without them, and that's how her best friend is killed.
Aww.
And,
sad.
And, yeah, and in the end, they're torn apart. Lyra and Will do not get to stay together because the only way that they can close the fissures between...
Okay.
Between worlds is they have to go back to their own worlds. Yeah. And they have to agree to do that.
Sad.
And it's actually sad because it's all based in Oxford.
Uh-huh.
The majority of the story, because that's where Philip Pullman's from. Right. And there's a bench in the garden at Oxford University that it's basically they agree on, like, one day a year that they're both going to go there.
Aww.
So, like, totally, this is, like, the sweetest thing. Like, because Matt and I found these books when we, like, first knew each other and we were apart. And he actually, like, he and his sister went there and then took a picture sitting on the bench and then, like, sent it to me.
That's so cute.
And so I have a picture. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful, beautiful picture. And then we went there together at one point.
That's cute.
It's so sweet.
That's cute.
But yeah, it's hard because, like, there's so much scope to these books.
Yeah.
But what I'm really excited about is that they are doing very diverse casting. Because it is a BBC series, and now BBC have a colorblind casting rule.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah, it's like, we've got Daphne, what's her name, from Logan.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember her name, but yes.
She's playing Lyra.
Oh, that's exciting. All right.
Lin-Manuel Miranda is playing Lee Scoresby. No, right? Yeah, he's playing Lee Scoresby. Yeah,
I'm very excited for that.
It's a really good cast.
Mm-hmm.
And the best thing is, there's nobody pitching a fit over the fact that Lyra's not white. And it's like, well, yeah, because she lives in a different universe.
Right.
So why would she have to be white? Because, like, it could just be that, I don't know, maybe they're...
Right.
You know, things were different. They were a little bit... Yeah.
Right.
Not that all of Britain's white anyway. But right.
Britain is not white.
It's very not white.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be, like, yeah, Matt's excited because they're filming. That's his biggest thing. He's like, you know, you want to be there right now because James McAvoy is going to play Lord Asriel.
Oh, okay.
He's a major character in it, too.
Lord Asriel, oh.
Yeah. Ooh. It's the Daniel Craig character from the movie.
Right.
Yeah. But I am so excited. There's, you know, it is. It's obviously it's fantasy with lots of, like, theological implications. Right.
Well, it sounds like something that works, but it's just going to be, a mini-series.
It's going to be a mini-series, right. And I'm so happy that they're making it a mini-series because it was so dense. And it's not... I think they're... there's three books in His Dark Materials. Uh-huh. And then there's companion books. Like, there's a prequel now.
Oh, okay.
The Book of Dust, which Dust is the thing that... It's the dark matter, basically, that they're studying. And then there's a couple, like, little side novels. Like, one about Lee Scoresby and one about... It's called Liars Oxford. So it's just her running around Oxford, basically, as a child. I think the first... I can't remember exactly what they've said, because I don't think it's going to be, like, one series for each book. I think the first series goes into the second book a little bit. I think they're going to integrate it maybe a little bit.
Yeah, because I was actually thinking, like, would they do that kind of like The Magicians did with... Because The Magicians, it's like Julia in the books. Julia shows up, and then she disappears from book one, and then in book two you find out what she's been doing.
Yeah.
But in the series, in the show, season one paralleled Quentin and Julia's stories.
I don't know if they've cast Will or not, but they must have.
Because I think it's, you know, like, when you're doing, like, a series, it gives you, like, a nice counterbalance to see.
It's the same thing of, like, what they did in Ender's Game was, because the one of the biggest problems with that story was a lot of it takes place in Ender's head.
Yeah.
And so the way they figured out to... tell the story for film was to use another story, which was Ender's Shadow, which was basically about the kid who was the backup.
Right.
That Ender never knew about.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, he knew the kid, but he didn't realize the kid was his backup. Yeah. And having the two of them, although that movie would suck anyway. Speaking of terrible adaptations. That movie was terrible and didn't do a good job of integrating Bean's story to actually make it work. Unfortunately,
right.
Bean was kind of relegated to the side, and it was like, no, Bean's a really important character. Anyway, side note. I love those stories, even if I hate Orson Scott Card. Yeah, I'm guessing they would integrate it. Like, there's a lot that happens before, but it would make sense to introduce Will maybe, like, halfway through the season or something like that, or start to do it. I could see that being the case.
Ooh.
I'm looking to see.
I have the cast list up. I do not see Will.
Okay, maybe not. Disrespect.
And
James McAvoy is only credited for one episode, but the only person who's credited for, like, more than one is Lyra.
Yeah, they probably just don't have the full filming information yet. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, because, I mean, Lin-Manuel Miranda has to be in more than one. And
he's only credited for two. There are two characters that are credited for two. Lyra's credited for seven. Everybody else is only credited for one so far.
Yeah, which just means
that's not IMDb, like, maybe.
Yeah, I would be just... They're just slow. Yeah. So you have an adaptation that you thought was particularly good.
Well, I was going to actually bring up I have not watched Magicians, but based on what you had said about your esteem for the show, it tells me it's better than the book.
Yes!
Yes, it is.
Like, when I... Because
there's, like, we see how you treat women, and we're not going to do that.
Exactly. No, like, when I was watching... I started watching season one just because my friend was, and she was, like, really into it at the time, so I was like, okay, I'll watch with you, but everything I've heard about the books is garbage, and I don't want to watch it. So I, like, didn't enjoy season one as I was watching, but then I got to the end of it when stuff that happens in, you know, the book happens to the women, and then, like, it didn't happen in the same way, or they did something else with it, and then I was suddenly like, oh, what is this? What is this? And then in season two, I was like, oh, we're gonna actually explore what happens to these women after this? Oh, okay.
Especially because you were just talking about how, like, Julia's arc is in book two of Magicians, and I read book two of Magicians, and her... Yeah, she's got... You find out what she's been up to, and it has just been be treated terribly by the author the whole time.
That's horrible!
So, like, I'm not here for this.
Yeah. No, Julia's my fave. Julia gets a... I mean, like, obviously, the horrible thing. I don't know how horrible the horrible thing is in the book, but, like, she still gets the horrible thing that happens to her in season two? I think it's season two. I don't remember what fucking season it is. There was a season where the horrible thing happens to her. And then I was like, this is so horrible, I want to die. But then, you know, then it's, like, how she deals with it, and then how she becomes powerful after, you know, that whole thing. Right? And then, like, by the end of this season, she's, like, has godlike powers, and I'm like, yes! Yes!
That's the only one I can think of, having not seen The Magicians. Actually, I have no place again, so I can watch it. Maybe I will. But there's not many that I'm like, oh, enthusiastically, this is better than the book. Probably, if there is something that I would think is enthusiastically better than the book, it's probably that I have not heard of the book, and the book probably isn't very good.
Right. Like Legally Blonde. Legally Blonde is based on a book, and the book is not good, so don't read it.
Yeah, like, probably prefer Stardust the movie to Stardust the book, just because Stardust the movie is happier than the book.
Right.
The book isn't, like, unhappy, it's just not, you know, it's trying to be more realistic and not as definitive and whatever, and I'm like, I just like my happy place, Stardust the movie. Princess Bride is interesting. Princess Bride is funny, because, like, honestly, as much as I adore that movie, like, more than anything else, probably, Buttercup probably has a better character arc in the book. She gets to be a little bit better.
She's a little, yeah. Like, yeah.
She gets a little bit more autonomy.
You know, yeah, she's a little more proactive. But then at least she gets to sort of grow into her queenhood at the end of it and start throwing it around, and I like that. It's Princess Bride is so interesting because William Goldman wrote the book Princess Bride. Before he wrote the book Princess Bride, well, he continued to be, but he was a screenwriter and he wrote Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. He wrote the adaptation of Stepford Wives, and then he wrote this Princess Bride book. It was in like the 60s and 70s he wrote it, and then at some point later he came back to it and wrote the screenplay for it.
Like
a guy who was a screenwriter, not only was a screenwriter, he's a screenwriter who had experience adapting books to screen, and then wrote his own adaptation of his own book for it. So it's really, I think, fascinating. It kind of makes me think of like how Douglas Adams has said he wanted every version of Hitchhikers to be different.
Right.
And you want them to always be the same. And so I kind of feel like that. Like William Goldman, you have the frame story in Princess Bride. The frame story in the book is really different.
Yeah. I just remember
it's even got like a frame story on top of the frame story.
Yeah, I remember I read Princess Bride, and then for a long time I hadn't seen the movie. I don't remember why this happened. I just whatever. So I read the book, and then I saw the movie a little while later, and I was like surprised that like the parts that are the same are like the same, and the parts that are different are very different. You know, like it's not in the middle. It's like either like literally identical, like someone just transferred it, or someone was like, I want to do a different thing now. I just don't want to do the same thing.
Because it's the book writer.
Exactly.
Who knew what it would take to be a screenplay. Like, he knew how screenplays worked.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He was like, I love this scene, so I'm going to do this one the same, and here I want to do something totally different. And I think it's really, it's a unique case, and I wanted to screen it for this film series we did in college.
Yeah.
But my teacher was like, the professor was like, well, guys won't go to see that movie because it's called The Princess Bride. And I'm like, no, everybody knows.
Yes,
everybody knows that movie. Yeah,
it's not just for girls. That's silly. A newer, like, not exactly the same in terms of like the end result, but like in terms of like a movie adaptation being as good as the book adaptation because the writer is also the director and the screenwriter.
Yeah,
is Perks of Being a Wallflower. Stephen Chbosky wrote it. You know, the book. And then, like, I don't know what it was, like, a decade later. I don't know. Because, like, it came out, what, 2012? And then I remember reading it when I was in, like, middle school. So it was, like, a long period of time between the book and then the movie coming out. But even though it's different because, like, the book is literally, like, an epistolary novel, right? It's, like, him writing to his friend the whole time. Yeah. Like, all the things happen, like, letters to his friend. And, of course, the movie is not like that. But it is, like, the things that he changed only made it better for the screen, and it gives me the same thing. Like watching the movie gave me the same feeling that reading the book did, you know. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is like you said, that's very rare because a different author brings a different interpretation.
Yeah,
which is why when you have things like Star Wars with different creative visions behind.
I have another one.
Yes,
I can see it right here. It's Shakespeare, so it doesn't quite count. That's like the history of Shakespeare, right? Is to have new adaptations.
Right.
But if BBC did a number of years ago, like 10 years ago, they did this miniseries called Shakespeare Retold, and they did Macbeth, Midsummer Night's Dream, Timmy of the Shrew, and Much Ado About Nothing.
Oh.
And Timmy of the Shrew was the one that seemed like to be the most problematic and difficult to update.
Yes.
The 10 things I hate about you did it, and did it really well.
Yes, they did. But they removed almost everything.
Shakespearean language. Like, occasionally they'll keep a line that's the same, but most of the time they change it. But the team we have sure was actually, like, one of the best ones.
Interesting.
They did, like, Midsommar's the weakest, but they never quite figured out how to integrate the fantasy in it very well. But the team we have sure is Rufus Sewell.
Oh. And,
I mean, that's a plus right there.
Yeah. Remember the name. Like, I can recognize the person who's the shrew, but I...
The shrew.
Can't...
I feel like... I don't think I've ever made it through Tang of the Shrew because I hate it so much. You know, like, I've never actually tried to watch it, a version of it.
I don't think I ever have either.
Shirley Henderson?
Oh, okay.
Is the Shrew, and it's done so... So the story in the BBC She's Very Told is that she's a politician.
Oh, okay.
She's an MP, and he is, like, a good-for-nothing wastrel, but he's got a title.
Right.
He has money. She has money but no title, and he has a title and no money. And put on, just like in the story, he's put on to her because, like, oh, you marry her and you'll be rich. And she is kind of into, like, going out with him and doing stuff because she, having that title will open doors for her.
Right.
Politically, that she wouldn't have opened it otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And then it works because they're both really mean. Like, I don't know. Like, but not to me.
Isn't 10 thing
I don't know how to put it. They even managed to keep that famous speech at the end where she's like, you should put your hands under your husband's heels. Because at the end, like, her mom and her sister both, like, get love interests through the course of it. And then they're fighting with their love interests over, like, prenups or something.
Uh-huh.
And they want Catherine to jump in, and they think Catherine's going to jump in and, like, agree with them and whatever. And she gives this speech to them instead. But, like, the way that she does it, it's, like, very, like, she's just giving them shit. She's serious and, like, has a job and a career and, like, I don't know, like, her mom and her sister are just, like, bored socialites or whatever.
Oh, okay.
And she's, like, rolling, like, just giving them shit, and then walks to the elevator, and her husband is, like, seriously? And she's, like, they're not worth the paper that they're written on, prenups. Like, she's, like, legally they're meaningless, and I was just leaving a hard time. But, like, you know, I don't know, it really, it's good. So that's a good one.
Okay.
Like, Shakespeare retold version of Tang of the Shrew, but I don't know.
Shakespeare retold version of Tang of the Shrew. I mean, yeah, because, like, I feel like it would not be hard to get better than Taming of the Shrew.
It's true.
Well,
I think about something really cute. It's set in a, like, local newsroom.
Mm-hmm.
With the two characters, and then Macbeth is James McAvoy, rare with his Scottish accent, which is rare.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, really.
I like that.
In, like, a kitchen, and then the other Midsommar is very good.
So I'll have to check that one out. Shakespeare retold. So, speaking of things that have been adapted a billion times, there's going to be a new...
Get on
me
about Les Mis.
Yes! There's going to be a new Les Miserables. It's coming out next year, and it's a BBC miniseries. And now I'm super excited, because I was just like, I saw someone made a gift set of, like, Fantine through the ages, like, different adaptations of Fantine. And the last one was, like, Lily Collins, and I was like, what the fuck is this? What is this? And it was, like, 2018 BBC miniseries, and I was like, how did I miss this? Just because it hasn't happened, it's just filming, or, like, it just finished filming, I don't know, yeah. You know. But it's Dominic West as Jean Valjean, and David Oyelowo as Javert, and apparently Lily Collins as Fantine. So I'm like, that's a strange choice, but okay. I'm ready to see what happens. And it's obviously going to be a book adaptation, not a musical adaptation.
Yes.
I expect that it will be good, but I don't know. My friend was like, Marius isn't even cute! This is garbage! But I'm sure they'll, you know, it'll be fine. He doesn't need to be cute.
What you should say is what is to somebody who's no layman's experience, because you're not counting the one movie that I've seen.
I can't, no. The one movie that you've seen butchers layman's, so you should not count it.
Which one has she
seen? She saw the Uma Thurman and Claire Danes version, where I'm pretty sure, doesn't it kind of make you think that, like, Jean Valjean and Fantine, like, have a thing?
I think so.
Yeah, I remember reading it. I was like, what is happening? Not like that.
Tom Shepard was the one who did the other movie, Tom Shanklin.
Oh, Andrew Davies is adapting. Okay, interesting. I love him. Oh, okay. Perfect. He did the 1995 Pride and Prejudice.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, yay.
He's my hero. Okay, yes, I'm excited. Anyway.
Yes, he did.
Okay.
Sounds like maybe watch this one when it comes out next year.
Yes.
Are they going to... So, Les Mis is not always a
musical. No, it's based in a book. By Victor Hugo, okay, and it's the June Rebellion. So it's not people think it's the French Revolution, but it's
I knew that it was
the French Revolution. It's the June Rebellion, but it's afterwards. About it's because the French Revolution just led to, like, more, you know, like, a different government that was...
Yes. Still corrupt and...
Yeah. Not corrupt and not... it was not, any better than before. Exactly. Not, so they were like, no, we gotta fix it. Anyway. So, but it starts off, and it's about this man named Jean Valjean, right? Who went to prison for stealing a loaf of bread. to feed his family, to feed his sister and all her kids, the loaf of bread. So he goes to jail, and he keeps trying to escape from jail so that he can feed his sister and her family. And so every time that he tries to escape, he gets more time added on. So he ends up with 19 years in jail. He goes to jail for 19 years because of some fucking bread. Okay? For being poor, basically.
Yeah.
So he gets out, and he basically can't get a job. He can't stay anywhere because he's a convict, right? And so people, like, turn him away, and they don't want anything. And he ends up staying at this bishop's house, the home of this, like, nice, kindly Catholic man. And because, you know, a life of crime is all he knows, he tries to steal some silver candlesticks from the dude's house. He's like, well, let me just steal these because I can't get a job. Can't do anything else, so I may as well make some money. And the police catch him and bring him back. To, like, you know, turn him in and be like, oh, we found the man who stole your candlesticks, now we're going to take him to jail. And the bishop was like, oh no, I gave him those candlesticks as a going away present. So he sends the cops away and he's like, I've just bought your life for God, basically. So I've just paid for your life with these candlesticks, for your soul with these candlesticks. So now you need to go out and live a good life. And then, you know, John is like, oh my God, I have been changed by this bishop man. I feel like a new person. So he literally becomes a new person. I guess those candlesticks are worth a lot of money because he moves to another town, the name of which I cannot remember, Montmartre, I think. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. He moves to the other town. He, like, opens up, like, a factory, some kind of business. And he works his way up to basically become the mayor of that town after a period of time. But because by making this new identity and going to another town, he's not fulfilling his parole. He doesn't go back and check on his parole. He makes all these dumb mistakes. Why are you like this, Jean Valjean? But anyway, so then he's got this police officer named Javert, who is super, like, lawful good. Like, he's all about, or actually really not lawful neutral, honestly. He's like, no, he's like, I must follow the law, and I don't care what the law is, good or bad. He's just like, I just gotta do exactly what the law says. So he's like, after Jean Valjean, but Jean Valjean did not check in for parole. Okay? It's super important to Javert. So... basically he figures out that this new dude who's the mayor of the town is Jean Valjean, so he tries to, like, you know, arrest him again, take him in, put him on trial, and it all becomes a big old mess. Meantime, there's this woman named Fantine who fell in love with the wrong man, family kicked her out, she has no money, she has no prospects, she's working for Jean Valjean's factory place, right? But because she had a daughter with the man who left her, right? It wasn't even like he just left her. Like, it wasn't, whatever. She didn't do anything wrong, okay? Mm-hmm. But this man left her, so now she's a single mom. So then people are like, oh, well, you can't work here because you're a single mom. And that's scandalous. So then they, like, fire her. When Jean Valjean's just, like, you know, minding his own business, running the town, so he doesn't know this happened.
Yes.
And then she ends up having to become a prostitute. By the end of it, she's a prostitute, and she, like, you know, contracts tuberculosis properly. I don't know. And then, I don't know what
I can't remember.
I just remember there was a lot of coughing up blood, so I feel like it was tuberculosis.
Yeah, probably.
So, anyway. So, Jean Valjean finds out, tries to help her, but she dies anyway, so then he vows to take care of her daughter, right? Her daughter is Cosette, so Jean Valjean adopts Cosette, but is also on the run from Javert. And then...
Cosette gets left with the mean people.
Yes, with the mean people, the Thénardiers. The Thénardiers are the people, they run an inn, they offer to take in Cosette, but they're really using her just to get money from the mom, right? And they just always constantly tell the mom that she's sick. she needs, you know, basically new clothes, whatever, all this stuff to get more money from the mom when they're not giving any of it to Cosette, right? Cosette's in rags, she has to do all their work, they give it to their daughters and use it for themselves. And mistreat Cosette's horrible. They're so mean to her. My baby. Anyway, so Jean Valjean rescues her, but he's also on the run. So many more, you know, fake IDs for him. And Cosette's like, I just live a lonely life and I don't know anybody. And my dad just takes us from town to town. It's very strange. Oh, there's a cute boy. So then she meets a cute
boy. Yeah.
Yeah. So while this is going on, we eventually make it to June Rebellion time, right? Where a group of students are planning the rebellion. One of whom is Marius Pontmercy, who sees Cosette and falls in love with her. And so then Jean Valjean has to deal with his daughter, potentially leaving him for this other man, right?
Yeah.
And it's like the only thing he has in his life. So he's like, what is this happening to me? What did I do to deserve this? But anyway. So lots of tragedy because the Jumbillion is very sad for everybody.
Yes.
But.
He's the guy that he thinks is like a son to him. I know a bunch of the
songs. Yes. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't think he's really like, but he's like, he would be like a son to me because if he marries.
The line in the one song that he sings is like, he's like the son I would have known.
Yes, if I had a son. Yeah. 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 Bring him home, right? Is that bring him home?
Yeah.
Bring him home. Okay. Anyway. Yes. So then Tomo John has to go to the fucking Jun Rebellion to save Cosette's boyfriend from killing himself because Jean Valjean moves Cosette away so that he would, so that Marius would not be able to see her. So, anyway. Like I said, Tomo John makes lots of stupid choices that then he has to fix. So. Okay, so yeah, but it's really beautiful. It's a really beautiful story about, you know, redemption and hope and just basically, you know, pushing forward when everything is garbage.
Because everything is garbage.
Yes. And
almost everybody dies.
Yes, almost everybody dies.
Except for
Marius and Cosette.
And the Thénardiers.
And the Thénardiers! Marius, Cosette, and the Thénardiers. So there you go, 50-50.
Basically the only ones you get.
Yeah. Precious angel babies and garbage people are the ones that survive.
That seems about right, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. And I actually, you know, it's funny because, like, from the start, like, obviously there is a lot of extra, like, Les Mis is a super dense novel. Victor Hugo loves to just go on.
Yeah.
He loves to talk. He loves to hear himself, look at himself right. I don't know what you want to say. But anyway.
Talk much about Paris, Parisian, Gothic architecture?
Yes.
Well, just to be, apparently, it's like, Hunchback of Notre Dame is not the Hunchback of Notre Dame story. It's about Parisian Gothic architecture. Like.
Right. No.
But he literally, because they were going to tear Notre Dame down. Mm-hmm. And he wrote that book, and it got so popular and viral.
Yeah. That they didn't.
That they did. So,
yeah. So.
You know, what is life's work? He's really right about Parisian Gothic architecture. He achieved his goal. He stayed timeless.
Exactly. See? I'm proud of it. Did you say he saved timeless? Okay. But yeah. Basically, that is correct. Okay, obviously the musical is the...
Amazing?
Yeah, amazing. The only thing, even with that, I have an... Like, my only issue with the musical, and you can see it in the... If you look at, like, the first French recording, like, the original, like, I don't know if you would call it first draft or whatever. Mm. The first French recording of the musical has, like, Fantine's song. Which is the equivalent of A Dream to Dream, mm-hmm. is all about, like, how she dreamed a dream to live a life with her daughter, to be able to give her daughter these things, and now she's never going to be able to, right?
Uh-huh.
Whereas the English version of it, and the one that, you know, now, like, now, the French one is also going to be that, you know, the French version of the English one,
yeah,
is about how this man left her, and she dreamed a dream with him, and now he's gone, and then, like, two lines about Cosette, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, did this need to be about this dude we don't even see? No, it did not. It should have been about Cosette.
It's because it's telling the story.
Right, so it's just telling what happened.
Glee covered that song. It was sort of returning it to its original.
Oh, when Glee. Oh, yes, yes.
Because it fell out.
Yes, that is true. Wow, Glee did something right. Okay.
That's funny.
Just kidding. Glee did lots of things right. But, debatable.
It says the Uber fan.
And then Eponine, like, one of the biggest, like, of course, when you speak fandom, the Les Amis, like, the dudes, right? All the dudes are the things that people care about. But in terms of women, what people tend to care about with Les Mis is Eponine and her sad, tragic
people
love
for
Marius.
People don't really like Cosette very
right,
much.
Because Eponine loves Marius and he don't love her, right? But, like, in the book and in that first French, you know, recording, like, Eponine's love for Marius is just like, wow, that dude's rich and he could give me some money. I wish that he would like me. The end. She doesn't, that's it. That's the
it.
End
she's
of that.
Not
she
does not, she's not feeling really, like, deeply
involved. And, like, her feelings are about how her father is abusive to her, and how she feels bad that she used to be abusive to Cosette, and now Cosette has things, and she does not. And how, you know, she is starving. So, like, the song, so, like, her, like, On My Own song, in the first draft recording, whatever, is about how she's all alone because her dad kicked her out, and she doesn't have any fucking food. The song is about not having food. So, anyway. So
and
like,
then it's turned into about
right,
a man.
Right, yeah.
So look, we just turn everything into about a man.
Yeah. At least, like, it's, but it's compelling, like, obviously it's compelling, you know?
Yeah,
like, clearly it is, because people are still compelled by On My Own. It's, like, the most popular song on Les Mis. But it's just, like, interesting how, you know, how those things change, and
yeah,
how the most compelling thing is about
I still love it.
Yeah, I love it. I love Les Mis. It's, like, you said, like, it's your favorite musical, you said.
Yeah, it's
and
my
it's
favorite.
It used,
I've seen it many times.
Yeah, it was my favorite musical. and then I heard In the Heights, and then I heard Hamilton. So, it's definitely like...
I can understand.
But, like, longevity-wise, it's my favorite musical. It's been my favorite musical the longest.
Matt hates it.
What the?
He loves musicals. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. He loves musicals. But he mostly likes old Hollywood musicals. Mm-hmm. He doesn't like when people sing over each other, and they do that a lot.
I usually, like, I hate Phantom of the Opera.
That's why I hate Phantom of the Opera.
Because I can't understand what they're singing.
You can never understand a word they're saying.
But I can understand with Les Mis, so yes. I don't have an issue with that. So, yes. So, listen to the recording. There's, like, a 10th anniversary recording and a 25th anniversary.
The 10th anniversary is one. Yes. The big one.
It's probably the biggest one. 25th anniversary has, like, Nick Jonas as Marius. And
I'm sure he's.
He still sounds fine. He sounds fine, but it's just.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's a little weird. But anyway, so 10th anniversary is probably. Was my favorite the longest, right? Because I obviously saw that one first. And so that's the thing I remember the most.
Yeah, same.
Obviously, I think the 2012 movie musical is really good, and they keep almost all the songs, and it's all, you know, live singing, whatever. And they do a really good job of conveying the message and the themes, and it looks good. Russell Crowe can't sing, but. But I feel like
it's like what's his face in Mamma Mia?
Oh, what is his face?
Pierce Brosnan.
Yes, Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, Pierce Brosnan. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Why stop casting people who can't sing?
Yeah, I don't understand what the point of that is. Like, I don't get it.
What's your favorite Les Mis song?
My favorite Les Mis song? Oh no, that's really hard. I love a lot of them. Obviously, I love On My Own. I love Red and Black. And I love In My Life. How about you?
Do you hear people sing?
Oh, yeah.
That's, like, I love that moment.
Yeah.
It's like, very everybody, like, yeah, it's, yeah. Yeah. Before it all goes to shit. I actually prefer the reprise, like, at the end, too, though.
Yes.
That's beautiful, even though it's super depressing.
Yeah. They're all dead, but they're reunited in heaven or whatever, you know? Yes. Like, they're gonna see the brighter future. It's beautiful. Yeah, it's beautiful. In terms of not musicals, there was a 2010? Did I say it? Or did I say it was 2000? 2000. The 2000 miniseries. It's a French miniseries with Gerard Depardieu. The only other name I remember. Oh, John Malkovich is in it too. There you go. I think John Malkovich is Javert. Did not know he spoke French until I saw this miniseries.
Oh, that's cool.
But, that was a good one. And it was like a pretty decent adaptation in terms of like knowing what to keep the same and then maybe changing some things for color. Like, I think there's, like, a lot more stuff with the nuns in that one, which is actually not, like, there is a big part with the nuns in the book, and one of the nuns is, like, one of my favorite characters, but, like, never, ever makes into an adaptation.
Yeah.
And she makes it into that one! So,
this is... Yay! I have to be honest, I've never read the book.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the book?
I would say read the book, but it's super long. And
really heavy.
Yeah, it's really heavy. I only read the book by accident. It wasn't by accident, but it was like,
it's like, how do you read a book by accident?
So, I was in class. We had, like, this, like, literature class. I think it might have been a history class, and we had to read a book that was, like, based on a historical time period, you know? And so we were in, like, the school library, like, picking books, and I, like, picked up Les Mis, and I was like, who would read this? This is crazy. And then my teacher was like, oh my god, you're gonna do Les Mis? That's so wonderful. And I was like, I am gonna do Les Mis.
It is so wonderful. So...
That's funny. So yes, that is why I ended up reading it, and then I freaking loved it.
Well, that's cool. But I'm glad you ended up liking it.
Yes,
you know, that's always helpful.
Yes.
Any other adaptations we can
think of? Yeah. What else we got?
I just want to like give honorable mention to the thing that's been being worked on that.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows if it'll ever come to pass? Even though this is not a. It's more along the lines of Golden Compass, but this one's not actually filming anytime soon that I know of, which is the Tales of the Immortal Nicholas Flamel.
Oh,
by Michael Scott.
Oh yeah,
that we were interacting with him on Twitter recently.
Oh yeah.
The only thing that worries me about that is that he's really involved, which I like.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really worried about the fact that. They're adapting it for a movie because how the hell, like, his Dark Materials needs to be a television show.
Yeah.
I even think Harry Potter would be better as a television show, and it's not nearly as deep as either, like, as his Dark Materials. Like, But the Immortal Nick, like, it's ridiculous how, like, every god
who has ever existed basically is in this story in some way.
Oh, wow.
And lots of mythological characters or lots of, like, heroes. Mm-hmm. Like, Shakespeare shows up at one point. Mm-hmm. And Billy the Kid shows up at one point. And, you know, like, Machiavelli is in it.
Wow.
Like, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how the fuck are you going to make this into a movie?
Right.
Because there's so much to that story. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they're going to do it.
Well,
if the author's highly involved, then they're probably changing the story a lot.
I would assume they're going to change the story a lot. Which,
I mean, honestly, something if I were a fan, I would rather them change the story a lot and preserve the spirit of it than try to cram all that in a movie, which is impossible.
To be fair, it got to a point where I was just like, oh my god, you're just putting people in to put people in.
Yeah.
And there were times that it felt like that.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah. I just don't know how they're going to do it, but it will be interesting. If they keep the core of the story and then just keep, you know, mm-hmm. like, you could just have all of them exist, but they don't all have to be in the story.
Right.
So, or not major players in the story.
Yeah, yeah. You can just have them, like, mention them in passing or whatever. Be like, or every god you can think of is going to be here somewhere.
Yeah. I think the Greek ones are the only ones that I'm thinking are.
Oh, that's no, good. I was about to say, like, well, that's really interesting, because the Greek ones are some of the most famous ones.
I think some of them are in it, but not all of them, and it's not the major one. Like, it's not, you know, Zeus.
Right.
And, yeah, right. It's not, like...
Well, they are overplayed anyway.
They are.
We don't need them.
It's a lot. But, like, there's always, like, at least one from almost every major culture that you can think of.
That's cool.
And almost...
So it's just one book or a series of books?
It's a series... I think there were five or six.
Oh, wow. All right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And it's obviously centered on Nicholas Flamel.
Obviously.
Who is mentioned in the Harry Potter books, which is the only way most people know.
When you
he
said
is.
That, I was like, is this a new Harry Potter spin-off? But I know that he's not, you know, I know he didn't come from that, I know.
It deals with the same mythology that she used.
Yeah.
She mined, which is that mm-hmm. he and his wife created the Elixir of Life.
Right.
And so it takes place in present day.
Oh, okay.
And it centers on these two twins who are in San Francisco and... Mm-hmm. There's some big prophecy of that they end up being the focus of, and they are, you know, it's, yeah, it's basically, there are gods who want to take it back to a time before humans became the more superior.
Oh.
If the gods ruled the earth, and basically the humans were their
servants.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so these twins are supposed to be the key to either helping that happen or keeping them in check.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is really interesting. There's lots of really good twists and turns to the story. It does get incredibly convoluted at times, but I like it. It's fun. It's a kid's story with all these things thrown in, which are like very big concepts of just who all these characters are, as opposed to big concepts like His Dark Materials is a children's story, but it works on a completely different level for adults because there is so much theological stuff in it. But yeah, I feel like there's like three levels. Mm-hmm. Like Harry Potter is probably the easiest for kids. And then Nicholas Flamel and then His Dark Materials is like barely a kid story.
Yeah.
It just takes, it's about kids. It's about the only thing you can say.
Right.
It feels like more of an adult story.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to check it out.
You should read it.
I'm going to do it. So I need to read more. Recently.
Phil Pullman is an amazing author. Honestly, I think they're like the best written books I've ever read.
Yeah.
I won't say he's my favorite author because Jasper Ford is my favorite author, but yeah. Philip Pullman's up there.
Interesting. Philip Pullman. All right.
Thank you for joining us. As always, you can find more news, reviews, editorials, etc. on withanaccent.com, including we're still putting up San Diego Comic-Con stuff because there was so much of it. And follow us at With an Accent on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, Instagram. There's too many freaking social medias. Right. I forget
and
them.
Just type With an Accent everywhere and then.
And that you'll find us. That works nicely. And With an Accent TV on YouTube.
That's what it's
That's different. The only place where we don't have With an Accent because some dude in Portugal owned it first.
Damn. Probably anyway. Has an accent though.
Yeah, but he hasn't used it in over 10 years, so screw him. Anyway, and of course, follow the pop cart.
Follow our pop cart at Pop a la Carte Pod.
I have
I had too much sugar. I don't know. Anyway, thank you for joining us.
And goodbye.
Goodbye.